Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Pfizer COVID shots appear 73% effective in children under 5. Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine was 73% effective in protecting children younger than 5 as Omicron spread in the spring, the company announced Tuesday. Vaccinations for babies, toddlers, and preschoolers opened in the U.S. in June after months of delay. Only about 6% of youngsters ages 6 months through 4 years had gotten at least one dose of a COVID-19 vaccine by mid-August, according to the American Academy of Pediatrics. Health authorities authorized tot-sized vaccine doses made by Pfizer and its partner BioNTech based on a study showing they were safe and produced high levels of virus-fighting antibodies. But there was only preliminary data on how that translated into effectiveness against symptomatic COVID-19. The new update analyzed COVID-19 diagnoses between March and June in Pfizer's ongoing study of the three-dose vaccine. There were 21 COVID-19 cases among the 351 tots who got dummy shots, compared to just 13 among the 794 youngsters given 3 vaccine doses. The child cases primarily were caused by the BA.2 Omicron version that was circulating at the time. Today, another Omicron relative, BA.5, is causing most COVID-19 cases in the U.S. and much of the world. In older children and adults, the COVID-19 vaccines have been used long enough to prove that they remain strongly protective against severe disease and death, even as the coronavirus mutates, while early protection against infection wanes. Still, scientists track that initial effectiveness rate as extra evidence of vaccine performance and to look for signs of how they initially hold up against new mutants. Pfizer this week asked U.S. regulators to authorize modified vaccine doses that better match the newest Omicron variants for people 12 and older as boosters this fall. The company said it also is developing updated shots for kids under 12. Obituaries and death notices from the Odessa American for Wednesday. Daniel Ray Brister, 84, died of natural causes on Friday, August 19th, at his home in Odessa. A memorial service will be held August 27th at 2 p.m. at the First Presbyterian Church in Odessa. Danny was born March 3, 1938, in Greenfield, Oklahoma, to C. Wayne Brister and May Eloise Brister Green. Danny was preceded in death by his parents, his brother Freddie Brister, and his wife Joey Darlene Brister Babcock. Danny is survived by his sister Chris Smith Brister and husband Ron. His children Danny Joe Brister, L. Dean Brister and wife Carmen, and Daphne Stewart Brister, his grandchildren and his great-grandchildren, and numerous nieces, nephews, cousins, and in-laws. Condolences to the family may be made online at acreswestfuneral.com. Janie Bell Morgat Barnes was born on July 20, 1929, in Kermit, to Charles and Celia Morgat, and was welcomed home by her Heavenly Father on Sunday, August 21st, at the age of 93 in Granbury. Janie is preceded in death by her husband, Russell Barnes, parents, brothers Philip, C.B., Charles, Ralph, and Fred, sisters Jessie May and Celia Pender, and grandchildren Mike, Quentin, Vicky, and Russell Barnes III. Janie is survived by her children, daughter Sandy McAdams, and husband Ben of Paris, Texas, son Bob Barnes, and wife Erlene of Granbury. son Jim Barnes and wife Misty of Fayetteville, Arkansas, and stepson Russell Barnes II and wife Linda of Beaumont, Texas, her brother Jimmy Morgette of Greenwood, Texas, and her grandchildren and her great-grandchildren, and five great-great-grandchildren and numerous nieces and nephews. Services will be held in Odessa at Frank Wilson Funeral Home at 1:30 p.m. on Friday, August 26th, with Pastor Kevin Bouchard officiating. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. In remembrance of Janie's life, the family asks that any charitable donations be made to Meals on Wheels of Odessa, the Crisis Center of West Texas, or your preferred charity. Curtis Brasher, 58, died Sunday, August 21st in Odessa. Services are pending with American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland. Martha Letitia Holguin, 65, of Odessa, died Saturday, August 20th in Odessa. Funeral service is scheduled for 1 p.m. Thursday, August 25th at Acres West 24-Hour Chapel. Burial will follow. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Barbara Jo Parker, 70, of Odessa, died Friday, August 12th in Odessa. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Felicita Martinez Puentes, 98, of Odessa, died Saturday, August 20th in Midland. Mass will be celebrated at 10 a.m. on Thursday, August 25th at Holy Redeemer Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Rest Haven Cemetery in McCamey. The family will receive friends for visitation on Wednesday, August 24th, from 5 to 9 p.m. at the funeral home. The rosary will be Thursday morning at 9 a.m. at Holy Redeemer. Arrangements are by Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home of Odessa.
This is Reed, and this is the Midland Reporter Telegram Health and Wellness for Wednesday, August 24th, 2022. Midland Memorial earns Beacon Award. Hospital's Critical Care Unit receives Gold Level Award of Excellence. The American Association of Critical Care Nurses, Aliso Viejo, California, recently conferred a Gold Level Beacon Award for Excellence on the Critical Care Unit at Midland Memorial Hospital. The Beacon Award for Excellence, a significant milestone on the path to exceptional patient care and healthy work environments, recognizes unit caregivers who successfully improve patient outcomes and align practices with AACN's six healthy work environment standards. Units that achieve this three-year, three-level award with gold, silver, or bronze designations meet national criteria consistent with the ANCC Magnet Recognition Program, the Malcolm Baldrige National Quality Award, and the National Quality Healthcare Award. Quote, MMH is committed to evidence-based practices, processes, positive outcomes, learning, and development for leaders and staff, end quote, said Brandy McDonald, Director of Clinical Operations and Critical Care Services. Quote, we are proud of our staff for this amazing achievement and the daily dedication they have to our patients, end quote. AACN President Beth Wathen applauded the commitment of the caregivers at the Critical Care Unit at Midland Memorial Hospital for working together to meet and exceed the high standards set forth by the Beacon Award for Excellence. These designated healthcare professionals join other members of the exceptional community of nurses who set the standard for optimal patient care, Warren said. Quote, the Beacon Award for Excellence is a statement to a team's commitment to providing safe, patient-centered, and evidence-based care to patients and families, end quote, Wathen said. Quote, creating healthy and supportive work environments empowers nurses and other team members to make their optimal contribution. Achieving this award is an honor that brings such joy to those who have worked so hard to achieve excellence in patient care and positive patient outcomes, end quote. Volunteers make major impacts in community. Midland Health is looking for volunteers to continue legacy of support for hospital. Midland Memorial Hospital's Volunteer Auxiliary Department has origins that are deeply rooted in the Midland community and dates back to January 1950, months before the hospital opened its doors for the very first time. The organization's main purpose is to provide volunteer assistance for non-professional tasks within the hospital. Another component of this invaluable department is the funding they provide to Midland Memorial Hospital for the purchase of medical equipment. Our exceptional volunteers have contributed more than $20 million in equipment and volunteer hours, calculated at minimum wage. To learn more about the volunteer services available at Midland Memorial Hospital, contact Auxiliary Director Jackie Geeling at jaclynn.geiling@midlandhealth.org or 432-221-1542. Tips to fuel vegan, vegetarian, or athlete. When pursuing a vegetarian or vegan diet, it's important to be thoughtful about planning meals to ensure sufficient nutrient intake. Parents of vegetarian or vegan athletes should be sure to feed their children nutritious meals to fuel them for sports. A Baylor College of Medicine expert offers meal suggestions to energize vegetarian and vegan children. Quote, because of their diets are predominantly plant-based, vegans and vegetarians can get a lot of great carbohydrates, end quote, said Roberta Anding, registered dietitian at Baylor. Quote, if they're eating enough food, their energy should come from carbs, since carbohydrates are the fuel of exercising muscle. They need to be more thoughtful about planning protein, since it's needed for growth and development, as well as recovery from sport, end quote. Good carbohydrate sources are endless when it comes to fueling your child athlete. Nutritious breakfasts include whole grain toast, oatmeal, or roasted sweet potatoes. Anding also suggests offering them rice, quinoa, or pasta. Beans are an excellent source of carbs and protein. Avocados and trail mix are good snacks for children as well, since they are energy and nutrient dense. As the diet becomes more restricted, there are fewer protein choices available, so parents must plan out their children's meals. Vegetarians can get their protein from milk, yogurt, cheese, or eggs. Vegans can get their protein from soy milk, which is the closest non-dairy equivalent to cow's milk, protein-wise. Egg alternatives made from chickpeas are another vegan option. Consider seeking professional assistance from a registered dietitian as the diet becomes more restrictive. Vegan athletes can become deficient in vitamin B12, vitamin D, long-chain omega-3 fats, riboflavin, and calcium. Anding suggests a black bean burger is good vegan burger alternative since it is a whole food that is not highly processed. Create recipes using lentils, beans, or quinoa for adequate protein consumption. Quote, the more we try to take something out of a product, the more processed it becomes. Vegan options that try to mimic meat are not great options, end quote, Anding said. Anding suggests that homemade meals such as vegan macaroni and cheese with nutritional yeast are a better option than processed foods. Cardio. Children and adolescents doing cardio-focused workouts should consume high-quality carbs and meet protein requirements. Whole grain toast with almond or other nut butters and honey is a sufficient snack to eat after a run or cardio-heavy exercise. Eating fresh fruit is a good way to fuel before a run. Tofu, tempeh, and other soy-based products are nutritious protein options to help fuel and rebuild after exercising. Strength training. After lifting weights, it's important to repair muscular damage. To ensure adequate amounts of protein after strength training, consider consuming meals and snacks like hummus and crackers, nut butter sandwich, high-protein plant-based breakfast cereal with berries or bananas, and glass of soy milk. Quote, vegetarianism and veganism are not just avoiding meat. You have to make sure you're getting quality sources of carbohydrates and protein, end quote, Anding said. Quote, see a dietitian and double-check with a pediatrician to make sure children are monitored, end quote. Mental health tips for back to school. Dear Mayo Clinic, our daughter has attended school virtually for the past 5 years and enjoyed the experience. Now that she is heading into ninth grade, she wants a more traditional high school experience. However, she has become more nervous as school gets closer and complains about stomach aches. How can I ease the transition for her and help her be less anxious. School is one of the most important places where children learn and grow intellectually, socially, and emotionally. And while the desire is strong for children to return to a healthy school environment, change can be challenging. It is important to remember that not every person reacts to change in the same way. Your child clearly recognizes that this coming school year will look different than past years. The first step to helping your daughter transition is to keep a healthy mindset and focus on the positive. High school students may find their emotions vary between excitement and anxiety. Although your daughter supports this change, the closer the change becomes, the more likely she feels nervous. I would recommend that you sit down with your daughter and try to get a sense of what it is about school that makes her nervous. Is she concerned about making new friends? Worried about being overwhelmed by homework? Is there something new that may be causing anxiety, like dealing with a locker combination or switching classes? Sometimes just being able to talk about those details and put the nervousness into words can help a teen who's feeling anxious. Try to help her think about other ways this might turn out. In general, the anticipation of things tends to be worse than the actual experience. I also recommend that you talk with your daughter about your own experiences moving into high school and any anxiety you had and how you overcame it. Doing this will let your daughter know that she's not alone in the situation, that it's okay to be nervous, and there are ways to get through it. Also, look at opportunities to ease your daughter into a back-to-school routine. Talk to the school administration about her concerns. If you can, arrange for a tour of the school or a meeting with teachers in advance of orientation. Talk with your daughter about changes in daily routines, which can be a challenge for everyone, even adults. Most importantly, remind your daughter to stay flexible and be open to the possibility that her feelings may change over the course of the year. And let her know that it is okay not to feel okay. Teens may still need to hear that affirmed by the adults in their lives. For anyone feeling anxious, it's common to be irritable or feel a sense of loss or sadness. Problems with sleep, physical tension, and worry can result. Consider these tips to help manage your daughter's mental health and ease the transition to this school year. Be aware and supportive. As you have already done, be alert to recognize any ongoing concerns or anxiety and continue to talk with your daughter about her fears. Be optimistic. Maintain a positive attitude about the transition and encourage her to do the same. Practice relaxation and learn new skills to manage stress. Explore how relaxation, mindfulness, or other stress management techniques, such as yoga, can calm the mind. Several free classes and mental health apps are online. Many of these skills are portable and can be used anytime, anywhere. Set and maintain a normal daily routine. Help your daughter aim to wake up and go to bed as close as possible to the same times each day. Remind her to stay hydrated. Try to keep up with a healthy diet and focus on getting physical activity. A healthy body helps maintain a healthy mood and mindset. Find support through friends. Help your daughter identify some friends who also might be transitioning into high school, either from virtual school or simply moving up from middle school. Encourage them to connect before school begins to help them all feel more confident. Some people may struggle with more significant mental health difficulties. So if you believe your child needs additional resources, I recommend talking with her pediatrician or another healthcare professional to locate local mental health resources. Dr. Craig Sachuk, Psychology, Mayo Clinic, Rochester, Minnesota. Hospitalization, multiple symptoms linked to long COVID in kids. Like adults, children who have tested positive for the coronavirus can develop long COVID, with 10% of youths who were hospitalized with COVID-19 experiencing symptoms such as fatigue, weakness, coughing, difficulty breathing, and shortness of breath 3 months later, according to a study published in JAMA Network Open. Based on data from 1,884 children and youths who were treated for COVID-19, the study found that long COVID was less likely among those under 18 who did not require hospitalization, but instead had been treated in an emergency room and discharged. About 5% of those youths had post-COVID conditions 3 months later. The researchers also found that the more COVID symptoms young people had initially, the more likely they were to develop long COVID. Nearly 5% of those hospitalized with 1 to 3 COVID-19 symptoms subsequently developed long COVID, compared with nearly 23% of those who had 7 or more COVID-19 symptoms when hospitalized. For adults, long COVID often involves problems with the sense of smell or taste, or both, with roughly 50% of those with COVID reporting problems, according to research published in the journal BMJ based on data from 18 studies involving 3,699 adults. After 6 months, most adults had recovered the senses, but about 5%, 12 million to 15 million people worldwide, according to the BMJ study, experience long-lasting smell and taste dysfunction.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm recording the Midland Reporter Telegram for Tuesday, August 23rd, 2022, Education section. MISD adds new leaders to LLI team. MISD has announced the addition of several new academic leaders in the Office of Learning, Leading, and Innovation, which oversees all academic initiatives in the district. Tyrell White has been tapped as the new Executive Director of Special Services. This position oversees the Special Services Department, which prioritizes meeting the academic and social-emotional needs of all students, with a focus on those with special needs. White comes to Midland with 15 years of experience from Southeast Texas, where he spent the last 2 years as the Senior Director for Special Services at Beaumont ISD. Our district is proud to meet the needs of all students who come through our doors, said Associate Superintendent Charlie Garcia. Dr. White will be a critical part of helping us reach MISD's stated goal of reaching all learners. Midland ISD has also hired 6 leaders to fill vacancies on the LLI team. Former MISD principals Kristen Reeves and Tricia Turan will join district newcomers Leslie Bonds and Christy Flynn as LLI directors. These roles work directly with campus administrators and teachers to develop programs and classroom strategies aimed at improving academic performance for all grades and subjects. The final 2 new directors are Hilda Arnoki, Director of Opportunity Culture, and Mark Grabilicek, Director of Performance and Accountability. MISD's Opportunity Culture, which incentivizes experienced teachers to mentor newer educators, is already receiving statewide acclaim for its success. The Director of Performance and Accountability will serve in the Research, Evaluation, and Assessment Department, which analyzes student data with the goal of identifying strategies to increase student growth. Each of these 6 new directors brings extensive administrative experience to their new positions, said Luis Luz Martinez. We are compiling the right team at the right time to support our important work as we look to build on our academic success.
Fear of side effects is causing anxiety. To your good health for Wednesday. Dear Dr. Roach, I'm a 75-year-old male in pretty decent health as far as I know. I had an ultrasound due to some lower abdominal discomfort. The ultrasound did not show any reason for the pain, which actually subsided. But it did show that my gallbladder is full of stones. I am terribly concerned because in the past, I have not done well under anesthesia. With colonoscopies, doctors say they give you something to help with nausea, but it never helps me. I vomit and stay dizzy all day, even into the next day. Should I be concerned about the surgery itself? I am beside myself, as surgery day is quickly coming up. What can you tell me about the terrible nausea I experience? Dr. Roach writes, as far as the surgery itself, removal of a gallbladder is usually well tolerated. It is typically done as a laparoscope rather than a traditional open surgery. Laparoscopy makes recovery for the patient much faster. It is still a major surgery and there are always risks with any surgery, but most people have a good recovery and outcome. Post-operative nausea and vomiting are a significant concern. About 30% of adults will have this complication after undergoing general anesthesia. There are indeed many ways to prevent this complication, and your best friend in this regard is the anesthesiologist. You should tell the anesthesiologist as much as you can about the previous procedures you have had, as well as your symptoms of dizziness and vomiting. The anesthesiologist can adjust the type of anesthesia and use not just one, but potentially several different treatments to prevent this complication.
This is the Dear Abby column. Wife keeps bringing up husband's long affair. Dear Abby, I have known my husband my whole life. We have been married 20 years and have 3 teenage children. Last year, I caught him cheating. Turned out, he had been with someone for 7 years. Our children and I were devastated, and he swore up and down he'd never do it again. I am occasionally triggered by things I see, things he says or does, or things I know he has done with her. When it happens, I usually bring up the affair again. He can't stand that I do. He says we have to put it in the past and work on our marriage. I told him this may be easy for him to do, but I'm not that kind of person. I tend to overanalyze and dwell on things. We have been to marriage counseling, and I was grateful for that because he was always against it. It helped somewhat. I need to know how to stop bringing up these matters because it is ruining my health and our marriage. I love him very much. One more point. I'm insecure because he is in the military and due to be deployed for a year. I'm afraid he may go online and start talking to someone. He swears he won't do this to me again, and he's so sorry for what he did. Please advise. Signed, Totally Lost in New Jersey. Dear Totally Lost, I'm glad counseling helped you and your husband through the rough patch. Now it's time for some more, for you, to help you cope with your insecurity issues. Making yourself crazy over what he might do during his year of deployment isn't helping you or the state of your marriage. You have to make a decision about whether to trust your husband, and then proceed from there. Dear Abby, an acquaintance from 40 years ago contacted me 3 years ago after he claims searching for and finding me on social media. We have been speaking on and off since then, but now he's calling every day, sometimes twice a day, saying he's making travel plans to come see me. He lives in Canada, I'm in Massachusetts. Way back when, he begged me to sleep with him, knowing I was dating his best friend. His friend was out of town at the time. Shocked and blindsided, I caved under his pressure and acquiesced, and then slept with him a second time. My boyfriend was still overseas, and I couldn't tell if he had any intention of returning. This acquaintance has yet to send me even a thorn, much less petal from a rose during the past 3 years, and has ghosted me a number of times. Should I entertain the idea of seeing him, let alone think there could be anything more? I'm divorced, my children are grown, and I haven't enjoyed any male company for the last 14 years. All this time, I've just been tending to my family. Signed, Desiring More Than Cyber Love. Dear Desiring More, you may be lonely, but please, start thinking rationally. For your own sake, do not become further involved with a man who would seduce a woman who is dating his friend and who has ghosted you a number of times in the last few years. During the periods in which you have been ghosted and lonely, it appears he has been very busy. This person is not to be trusted with your heart or anything else. You can write to Dear Abby at dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069. Her column is distributed by Universal Press Syndicate.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.